Welcome to Podcasting Tech, a podcast that equips busy entrepreneurs engaged in podcasting with proven and cost-effective solutions for achieving a professional sound and appearance. I'm Matthew Passy, your host and a 15-year veteran in the podcasting space. We'll help you cut through the noise and offer guidance on software and hardware that can elevate the quality of your show. Tune in weekly for insightful interviews with tech creators, behind-the-scenes studio tours, and strategies for podcasting success. Head to podcastingtech.com to subscribe to this show on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform and join us on this exciting journey to unlock the full potential of your podcast. We're going to do something a little bit different on the show today. Instead of just going into a single podcaster's studio, we are actually going to a professional podcast studio setup. We are chatting with Charlie Burney. He is the co-founder and CLO at Podville Media. It's a podcast studio and production center and in the Washington, D.C. area. Charlie is also the author of The Tao of Podcasting, and we'll have a link to it so you can check that out. Charlie, it is great to chat with you today.
It is great to chat with you, Matthew, and nice to see you again after so many years. It's just wonderful, and I'm excited about this.
It is great to see you again and excited to chat with you. And you know, I've definitely heard you chat with me about the studio a little bit, but it'll be nice to get a little bit more in depth on it today. But just sure. To kind of kick off, what was the impetus for starting this studio? Like, how did that get going?
Well, when we first met, I think I was still in Gaithersburg. So I'm into my third location. And in Gaithersburg, I was there for originally unrelated podcast reasons, but it's part of the story. I was in a co-working space. And from my background in real estate, I approached co-working with sort of how can this work? And obviously we've seen the rise and fall, if you will, of WeWork. And that still has somewhat to be determined. But there I was sitting in a brand new co-working space with one other guy who did financial advice, financial services. And actually he's still doing a podcast, doing really well. And I did close to 100 episodes of Launch Financial with Brad Sherman of Sherman Wealth. And
I know Brad.
Do you know Brad?
I do. I chat with him a few times.
So
nice guy. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a great guy. So at any rate, I was in this co-working space and was they were hoping I could help promote it. I live in Montgomery County, and that's where the building was in Gaithersburg, Maryland here. And one day my friend Jeff Davis walked in and he was doing some PR for this new space. They were going to get the county executive in, et cetera, et cetera. And he had got me started listening to podcasts. Was the first guy who ever got me started listening to podcasts, Matthew. And I still listen to a show called For Immediate Release about B2B marketing, basically. And Jeff was there. We were probably having a sandwich one day. And I said, Jeff, why don't we do a podcast in this co-working space? Because every office in, you know, around the whole office layout is doing something different. They had an e-newsletter that they put out once a week trying to promote these businesses and trying to get new clients. And so I didn't really know what I was doing. I listened to a lot of Pat Owens. I listened to Ray Ortega. I listened to Cliff Ravenscraft back in the beginning and tried to figure out what this thing podcasting was. I'm an amateur musician, so I thought I could use my PA system. You can't use a PA system to make a podcast, but you can make a lot of noise. So I bought a $100 Behringer 4-track and used the Shure SM57s that I had for open mic and stuff like that. And I started to make podcasts called Launch Podcast, which were to support launch workplaces. And they would put that episode out in their weekly newsletter. And I remember first someone coming to me and saying, oh, I don't know what a podcast is or how long will this be? And I said, it's as long as you're interesting. And that's kind of how I ran the show, is once they started to be really super boring, we would stop. And so we had a lot of fun. I did, I think, about 88 or 89 episodes before I partnered with my current business partner, Oscar Zabios, and moved to Glover Park, which is, if you're a Washingtonian or you know Washington, it's kind of North Georgetown on Wisconsin Avenue. He had started a studio, a one-room studio that came out of a terrestrial radio show, and all those formats flopped. You remember that, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12 years ago, and Jack Radio and all these other things. So they dumped all their radio, if you'll forgive the expression, shock jocks, and there was a show called The Don and Mike Show, and that became The Mike O'Mara Show. And so he went to Mike O'Mara and said, let's do a podcast. And I think Mike O'Mara said, what's a podcast? And I remember when I started listening to it and found it, you know, trying to find podcasts 10 years ago was pretty interesting. And finally found episode one. And here on the microphone in my ears comes Mike O'Mara saying, I just want all of you out there to know that I'm not one of you. And I thought, God almighty, why would he say that? So it's a very successful podcast, a great example of a podcast that monetizes itself. We still host that in our studios every day. So Oscar had one little studio in this little office building in Glover Park. We met. I interviewed him on one of my shows. He was doing business school with Smith School of Business through University of Maryland at the time, and he did an outreach group. I'd never been to the Reagan Center, and he did an outreach group for his business degree at the Reagan Center about podcasting and apps. And so I heard about it on their show. I signed up. I went to it. And the way he tells the story, I'm telling it, but is I kept asking good questions. So he said, well, when we do a breakout group, I want to sit with you. And that was the genesis of our first studio in Glover Park. So we eventually took over half of the third floor and most of the second floor, which had been a passport office. And I had a wonderful bullpen, Matthew. I'd always dreamed of being a comic strip artist. As you look at some of my stuff online, you'll know I like to draw a lot.
I've gotten and a few I'd drawings dreamed, in the past. They're great.
I dreamed of having a bullpen. And at that time, this was before COVID, and we had this large room where they'd assembled all the passports. So it had a railing and desks around the edge of it. And we used to have 10 people in there talking. We would buy lunch every day and have 10 people in there talking and editing, and it was a joy. And so we changed the third floor to have two studios back to back. So we had one production room in the middle, and we could use it sort of a double-sided production room. And then a third studio for a newscaster who came in, sort of her studio for the most part, and did the Angie Goff show. She's a local news reporter here, and a wonderful Miss Angie. So those were the days when my real estate heart would hum when all three studios were going at the same time. That was just joy. We were on kind of a membership format we just started out with. But the truth of it is it just kept evolving, as you would assume. And we kept giving so much back to the clients and evolving their shows and giving so much advice. By that time, I did know what I was doing. And when you paired Oscar and I together, I always like running something with two people at the top. We had a lot to give. We gave away hours and hours and hours and hours of free podcast marketing and podcast advice. And the truth of it is people who would rent the studios, the idea was some of them would learn how to run them and we would let them run them. But sometimes we would come in and run. It was a fee structure. There just weren't anybody learning how to run their own studio. There was one, Sarah Fraser, who's out in LA now and we're very close. But we ended up being sort of a Blue Diamond podcast studio where we would help people evolve their shows. And what they wanted to come in, as I'm sure you would know, Matthew, is they wanted to come in, have a cup of coffee waiting on the table, sit down and talk and create. And they didn't want to deal with any of the other issues. We started doing Santana Moss's podcast. He was really doing it as a proving exercise to get to the big leagues and get on network television. He's former Washington Redskin.
And the University of Miami alumni.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so we did. Tana would come in and pay me in cash and I would freak out. And that's when social media was evolving. We were doing Tana's show and Instagram stories came out one day and we were producing video for stories that afternoon and trying to post it. So we evolved into doing the podcast, to doing very high-end video podcast, to doing the social media content, whether it was Twitter, whether it was Facebook, whether it was Instagram, and then of course now TikTok. And YouTube Shorts, but we would do those for the clients. It just became into, we sort of turned into a high-end production studio, and I love the days at Glover Park, but it was situated, for my commercial real estate mind, it wasn't situated near a metro. Now, I know this from real estate, Matthew, it doesn't mean people will use the metro, but they like knowing there's a metro there, and that's Washington for you. So we ultimately moved, really during COVID, we had started to occupy one room at the studio here at 1900 M Street to do a video production for a local marketing guy who wanted a video production. And then we started working with ESPN, doing a couple of their shows under the sub name of The Undefeated, which became Anscape in the ESPN family. And then sort of COVID hit and we started to think what was going to work. We ended up taking over this half of the floor of the fourth floor here and moving out of Glover Park completely. So we still have three studios. One is sort of small one. You can do two people or a one person shot with a camera facing you for the person who's inevitably remote. And then a slightly larger studio, we can do two or three or even four people in a pinch. And we've got a very custom made desk for that. And then this, the original large room that we rented where we can do essentially television shows. We can do the White House Historical Association is set up in one corner and this ESPN show that we do for Dominique Foxworth in the other side of the room. And it's complicated. You know, when I met you, I was still learning about microphones and we've had to learn about lighting, and the things about lighting that I know and don't know could, you know, are overwhelming. So to do a really good shot that's that you could use on TV, you've got to eliminate all shadows. And we've the money we've spent on lighting, if I knew, I'd go into another career probably.
Well, so, I want to talk to you actually, yeah, going back to the equipment. That's an interesting sure, place to bring up, because yeah, when podcasters are getting started, right, they're working in their home, they're working in their office, right? Maybe they're taking right, it on the road. You know, we're right, typically looking at equipment that's in the $60 to maybe $150 microphone range, or maybe a mixer yeah, in the $200 to $600 range. Obviously, when you're dealing with a professional studio, you are bringing in the likes of an ESPN and, you know, yeah, former NFL players and, you know, other big wigs in and around our nation's capital. You have to really step up your performance. So
we did.
What were you thinking about when you were making investments in microphones and cameras and whatnot to really turn this into a professional operation?
Well, it's a great question. I call it falling forward, or to put it in the language of Chris Kremitzos from Podfest, it's starting ugly. I as I think I told you off mic, when I started out, I had some Shure SM57s, the kind of thing you could use to put a nail into a board practically. But it wasn't until I partnered with Oscar, and I think you're on an RE27 there, perhaps. I know I am. I first talked on a microphone that cost more than, you know, $70, and it blew my mind away. And I thought, why, of all the things I'd spent money on up till that point, why hadn't I bought a really good microphone? And I probably should have called you up, you know, 2 years before that, because you were the first person I met who had like a microphone array in front of them, I think. And anyway, you're right. It was a tough decision. We just knew, I had the instincts, that's sort of how Dad ran his businesses, that this industry, the media industry, was going to be big in terms of what we were doing with podcasting. I didn't know it, but even back in Glover Park, my clients were asking and demanding video. My intention in the beginning, Matthew, as you may know already, was just to do audio. It was a big enough chore for me to learn audio after 26 years in real estate and development. And I thought I was going to be perfectly happy running a humble little studio that did audio podcasts, but that just wasn't going to work. And so as soon as the client started asking and demanding video, we just fell into it. So yes, it was a major investment, mostly on my part. And we've borrowed a lot of equipment from ESPN, but most of it we've plowed any money we've made back into the investment in the equipment. So we have, I don't know, $500,000 worth of equipment here probably.
Well, we'll get a few of those listed here in the show notes so people can kind of get a sense of what we're talking about. And right, 'cause they're usually very complicated names and numbers and things that most of us aren't going to know. But still, people are going to want to check it out. We'll have some pictures. One thing you were telling me about before we get started that I think is interesting for folks who might be thinking about not just recording, but being able to offer recording services to other, basically starting a studio, right, maybe not to the same level, but,
right,
you know, offering it out to other folks, was you're talking about the modular walls that, you know, your backgrounds for your shows can change pretty quickly between all your different clients. How did that come about?
Well, in the Glover Park studio, we had built a green wall. We'd painted a green wall and found that we really never used it. There just wasn't a need for it. However, there is some need for different shows to have a different look. And one of the things I learned in Glover Park, in Gaithersburg, was I always forgot to take a picture in the very, very beginning, 11 years ago before you and I met. I'd always forgot to take a picture, which I call the studio selfie, of me and you doing a podcast around that original round Formica table before I ever had any soundproofing. I was collecting egg cartons, to be honest with you, in a big pile in the corner. I never used them because then I started buying off of, what is it, B&H, Matthew, or the other one, Sweetwater.
BSW, one of those big.
Right. And that was the long kind with the slits, but not like this little pyramid triangle kind you see behind me. We've set my office here up as sort of an ersatz podcast studio if you needed to use one, and our other ones are used also because I'm very loud and they want to soundproof my office because my voice carries very far. And I have animated conversations quite often. So, quick aside on that topic, and in that first book that I mentioned to you, one of my clients does this to this day. If you can't afford soundproofing, speaking about that just for a moment, do it in your closet. And you can't buy that quiet that you get in a walk-in closet with, you know, your clothes and your wife's clothes or whatever you've got in there. And Debbie DeChambeau, one of my first friends and clients out in Gaithersburg, she says she still sets up a card table in her closet when she does her podcast.
Can't do better at the acoustics.
You can't buy it, right? So the modular system is pretty simple. We have kind of a ledge, a davit, you know, all along all the hallways here at Podville Media, and all of our vertical, say 3 feet wide and 8 feet tall panels hang on those davits. And so we have white brick, red brick, distressed metal, wood, weathered wood, and green. We can turn any studio, and then a type of panel that also has pegs in it. Local adaptive, DC adaptive, Chris Jones developed the system originally for children's rooms where you could put pegs in it anywhere, just like in an old workbench. And then you can put shelves on the pegs and you can put other items. And it's a limitless designing sort of Rube Goldberg machine where you can create any environment, and then you can put, you know, MP in letters on top of one shelf and your logo in one, or a logo card hanging behind you. I love mixing. So I often think of it as a high school play or a college play where we were building sets. And so we're literally doing, you know, high audio and high video and as advanced technical stuff as possible. But we're also using sets like we did in those theatrical productions, because if you've got 40 minutes and I've got someone with a good back, I can have that whole room change to look completely different. As I say, red brick, white brick, and the brick on these panels is not brick. It's just, you know, a plastic fascia, and or like I say, wood, or when I did a golf industry show, it can look completely green behind me, which is kind of a cool look. And I think the Mike O'Mara show, if anybody wants to go on YouTube and look at that, it's the distressed metal look with two sections of panels with the peg in it, and you can cover over the peg with a black material, which we've done, and then, you know, have shelves that hold sort of the mementos from, you know, 30 years of that show. Then in the corner of Studio A, we can bring in panels that are custom built and make it look like a corner of the White House. We do a production with the White House Historical Association, so it's nonpartisan. It's just about the history of the White House. And we can make it look, it's got the tartan of the White House hanging on one side and some of the White House plates behind the host, Stewart. So you can give any kind of a different look, but we really typically don't use green screen or infinity wall or any of those things. We like to do it sort of a mix of new and old, I guess.
It's interesting. I like the idea of the not just the modular walls, but also having that kind of like corkboard, being able to change out everybody's accessories, right? We're obsessed, especially after, you know, COVID and the Zoom age, of what do we have behind us? What books are we showing? What, you know, what tchotchkes are living on the shelf behind us? So the fact that every one of your clients who comes in can get a personalized, customized experience and really make the show theirs and not just another Podville, you know, media show is a really great thing that you're offering.
Only thing digital, Ann Pasmanic for Power Station often uses the Mike O'Mara studio. So they'll take all their stuff off the shelves, and then behind her is a large monitor, and we will just put the show logo up on that. We used to do that in Glover Park for Santana's show. So we will theme it out with the digital if you want. But often when we build this and put the shelves, and very good point. We'll put the books that host wants. Maybe the host has written a book or has a section of books, maybe a fake plant. We've got a whole lot of stuff. If you walk down the hallway, just limit, unlimited stuff. We've got R2-D2 if you want that. And then don't forget to take a picture so you know how to rebuild it if you need to do it 2 weeks from now. Because if you forget that, shame on you, because we want to make it look like it's been the same. So our clients love I appreciate your bringing that up. Our clients love the shelving systems because they're able to bring in, and many clients keep a box of that stuff here, just in storage so that they can rebuild that or add to it. My gosh, Angie Goff had so much Dolly Parton paraphernalia that it filled up a half a room. So she likes Dolly.
That's awesome. Well, so as a reminder, if you're listening to this, check out podvillemedia.com. You can get a little glimpse of what we're talking about. We'll have a link there. Also, while you're checking out the show notes and you're interested, check out The Tao of Podcasting. That's the book that Charlie wrote and recently released, which also features some of his own drawings, which he is great at. I've actually been the subject of a few of his drawings after having interviewed him before, and they're always really good. Before we let you go, a couple of questions that we're trying to ask everybody. And so,
sure.
One thing that I want to know from you is, in the podcasting space in general, whether it's from the listener side, the creator side, is there any place that you'd like to see improvement, any new technologies, new services, something that could make it better for everyone involved?
Wow. What a great question. I'll sort of take it a little sideways because it occurred to me that just before you finished your question, the thing that I like talking about, the thing that I think is underutilized so far, and one person who I helped when they were starting out is literally doing this for his own company now. He's in legal services, legal informational services. What I don't see enough of, Matthew, is the inward-facing podcast. By that, I mean a podcast that's not made to be private necessarily, but made to be for the company and for communicating inside a company. Do you know what I mean?
I actually had a client who I can't say who the client was because it was, mm-hmm. it was actually proprietary, but mm-hmm. yeah, it was the HR arm that came to us and wanted to produce a podcast, and it was meant just for the employees there. Yeah. Talking a lot about DEI and like some of the initiatives right. that they were doing with other employees.
Yeah. I'm absolutely fascinated by it. And don't know why it's not happening more. Back when we were renting studios, and we still rent this studio, depending on the client and what their needs are, we'll give it to you for a couple episodes or a day. We had Uber come in to our Glover Park studio, and I thought, oh, this is fascinating. Uber's doing a podcast. Well, it's not for you and me. It was for inside Uber for communicating their ideals and whatever they were worried about, whether it was legal or marketing wise or trying to talk to the drivers. Now, I've never met a driver who had heard of the podcast, so I'm not sure which part of the company it was meant for, but they came and rented our studio for about 4 hours one day. Yahoo has rented our studios a couple times. We do a lot of that, but I'm fascinated by the inward-facing podcast. And Ray Ortega, who I mentioned to you earlier, he worked before he moved to the West Coast. He lived here in Maryland and worked for NIH doing a podcast. Mm. Now, it was hard to find that podcast. You had to burrow down on their website and you had to know which page. But finally, I found it one day because he gave me the breadcrumbs and there were two little blue hyperlinks, but it was just really for the doctors. And that fascinates me. You know that 11 years ago, you and I were saying, spend most of our time explaining to people what this thing they call a podcast is. And I think Cliff Ravenscraft used to tell a story about that and pointing out what that purple icon on your iPhone was meant to be, and nobody knew what that purple thing was. Now today, mostly I say to people, why aren't you podcasting? Because there's so many good reasons. There's so many different financial levels. You could do it with your phone if you want. It'll sound like you did it with your phone, but but there's so much, whether you're, and I came from a commercial real estate background. A lot of times on that show I mentioned FIR, they talk about the CEOs behind the door. Because CEOs usually come to work and they shut their door. And most of the people in the company are fascinated and interested in the CIO, the CEO. And sometimes they're sort of an iconic figure to those people. And I have said to previous bosses, why don't you do video? Why don't you address your company? Even on Slack, people don't do video addresses to say, thank you, this. My wife had been very sick. I did a Slack inside our 10-person company, and I got a thunderous response back because everybody's in those larger companies, everybody wants access to the CEO. And you've probably heard in some groups they've done, hey, win lunch with the CEO, or once a month the CEO has a, you know, a meet and greet with people. And I'm like, why aren't these groups doing more inward facing communications? I just don't quite understand, maybe you do, why there isn't more of that. I think it's starting to catch on. But
it is starting to catch on. I think the big issue is the distribution, right? The whole joy and the benefit of the podcast is being able to download it, have it on your phone, listen in the car, listen while you're working, things like that. True. And when they are private and proprietary, the platforms are getting much, much better to do that. But it is a expensive and complicated thing sometimes to arrange that. We tried working with a pharmaceutical company, and the level of security that was required just overcomplicated the project to such a degree that it wasn't even worth it. They just wound up recording audio and just putting it on the backlink on their, you know, intranet.
Right.
So that's probably one of the bigger ones. And I think also just, I don't think people appreciate how useful it could be.
I agree with that.
But like you said, sometimes you put that stuff out and workers are like, I didn't even know this existed. I'm not going to listen to it, right? I'm already on company time and I'm on company time. I'm not using non-company time to listen to more stuff.
Right. Well, what is it Tom Webster calls the media diet? And, you know, the people who aren't listening to podcasts might not ever start because they've got other stuff they do.
I mean, you have a very fancy studio. You have a lot of good stuff. But is there any tech out there that's on your wish list to improve the studio, or just something you want to get your hands on, or something you want to see created to help you guys out?
Well, we're working with Casted now, because the thing that didn't exist until recently is the right numbers, the right feedback, the reporting, which the clients have asked. You're aware of this probably as much or more so than I. The feedback, the actual demographics, if you will, of the podcasting consumption. And that is something we've searched and searched for. We've talked about building ourselves, but we're working with a company called Casted now, C-A-S-T-E-D, and Lindsay Chepkema, who posts quite regularly about what they're doing on LinkedIn. It's absolutely fascinating. And it is also incorporating AI into doing really functional data reporting. That's what we need. What as an aside, what I find still the feedback I get, and I don't know if you know Ariel Nysblad and what is her, is the collation of how do I find this? Now, you and I know how to find podcasts, Matthew, but a lot of the feedback that I get from the non-listeners is, well, I'm never going to be able to find my food group, my special interest. And, you know, you got to look if you're going to find it, back to an old, you know, joke dad told, but the aggregation of content still seems to be something that's underdone. I think Ariel does it with what she's accomplishing, and I'd love to meet her someday and talk to her about what she's doing. But finding those in your zone of interest, I guess you got to lead the horse to the water, right? Because they're not going to look. You and I both know, again, how to find those things. It's not really that hard, but that seems to be a problem. I think it's interesting to see what Katie Kremitzos has done with her network of meditation podcasts. And there are networks out there now, but then you've got to kind of saddle up to the, you know, come up to the network and jump in. I think the New York Times is trying to do that with their audio app, right? But I still think there's a lot of growth there. And I don't think it's fully baked yet, because now that we have TikTok, YouTube Shorts, Instagram, Reels, et cetera, how do we blend all of that together? I can't watch a YouTube short and necessarily find your show, your audio show. Now, if you're doing a good job as a YouTube producer, you should have all your links there, right? But I won't name names, but I've got clients who I finally trained to make Instagram posts about their show who have no hyperlink. So we're still at a place where we're not functioning and giving enough feedback and giving the discoverability. I think the thing that I need that we've found with this company is the data that I can share with my clients, because they want that feedback. You know what I'm talking about. They want those numbers. They want to be able to use, I guess the right way is to say it, I need data that's actionable, so I can know what kind of a monetization, what kind of content, what kind of content that I'm putting out there is the most appealing and the most vital and the most worth my time, right?
Since day one, that's been one of the biggest complaints from clients has always been, you know, how do I get better data? Yeah. How do I know who's listening? And interesting about the discoverability, right? It's easy to go to a podcast store and find podcasts, or if you know what you're looking for, type in the name. But right, I'm, you know, trying to find a podcast about X and there's just hundreds. It's like, how do you figure out which is the right one for you? That's right. I don't know how you solve that problem. I'm sure people are working on it, but I kind of feel that way as well.
Well, I do have one more item on this topic, and you know, you and I will go, let's say we're trying to find out about, I don't know, some hobby, basket weaving, overused hobby item, but then we'll look at those five shows that we've found, and you and I will know to check and see if they've done episodes recently or not, or if they've pod faded or not. But the other folks who aren't as deep into this as you and I are don't know that.
Right.
They'll so by the to time you found it and listen to one that's faded, then you're disenchanted with the whole thing. You know, it's like, screw it. Podcasts are a waste of my time. So that's part of the problem. I've actually changed my title here, Matthew, sort of a joke, but I call myself the CLO because I try to listen to as much of our content, if not all of our content, and then as much exterior content produced by other people. So I call myself the Chief Listening Officer. The thing, I guess, to also answer your question that I found, do you remember back, I know you do, when we used to listen to the radio, we would simply turn the dial, right? And there's even audio of dials turning and tuning into news, tuning into music, tuning into talk shows, right? It seems funny to me that when we're listening to a podcast, we tend to hunker down and listen to that whole podcast and not turn the dial as much. I have an enormous playlist. And I would love an app where I could almost turn the radio dial back and forth from shows. So I'll listen to a show. I've got two former employees who are out doing other shows, and I really try to listen to them. But I don't really follow basketball. I'm sorry if everybody's groaning at me. And Ethan does a show about the Cavaliers, and it's really well done, and I love hearing him. And I'll listen to it for a few minutes. Maybe I'll learn and start watching basketball on television. And then I'll sweep through and go to the next one. So I know Ray Ortega was horrified when I told him that I listen at accelerated speeds. I still do occasionally listen at accelerated speeds. But I'm trying to tune that radio dial, and I don't know a functional way of doing that other than just manually scrolling on that screen trying to pick a different show because, as I say, I'm trying to listen to everything that we produce plus as much other content as possible so I keep learning. Just like if you are a chef in a restaurant, you want to go eat the other guy's cooking, right? And so I don't think other than what I'm doing, which is either scrubbing so that I can get to the next show or just manually going out and in, I don't know that there's a tool so that we could just tune and sample different shows because that's what we were doing with the radio, right? If the WTOP, which is our local news, wasn't talking about the traffic, I didn't really care about their content. So they do traffic on the A's. If the rock and roll station back in the day wasn't playing Blackwater by the Doobie Brothers, then I was going to go try to find that somewhere else. And it seems to me there ought to be a way, in addition to what Ariel is doing, to find other shows and sample other shows. There was a tool. Didn't you and I talk about this on a, what was that tool called? Sounder or something. There was a tool with one of those vowel, no vowel and then R back in the day that would do brief parts of audio. I can't remember what that was. I think you and I did an interview a long, long time ago, and I might have talked about that, but that died. There was an interest in it, and there is no way to sort of quickly go through, just like when we're channel surfing, I guess is the best analogy, through podcasts to try and find that one that, you know, even Alice and I will do it. My wife's name is Alice. When we're, you know, trying to find a show to watch on Netflix, we'll just go and look at the trailers, right? And there's no way to do that. And I think that is somewhat makes it exclusionary for the non-listener, the ones who are not listening now. How can I get in? Well, I have to get in and I have to subscribe and I have to listen to a whole 20 minutes or 30 minutes of that show. It seems to me that it's still a cumbersome process to get orientated to following new shows. Sorry if I've gone on too long.
No, it's all right. So it's almost like what you're saying is the podcast store, the Apple Podcast Store, is they're showing you new and noteworthy ranking shows. Right. Instead of clicking on it and just getting the latest episode, it should automatically play a trailer or a snippet or a preview that maybe even the podcaster themselves has selected so that people can get a good taste of what they're going to be getting.
I think that's a great idea, because you know when you hover over that show on Netflix, it starts playing the movie.
Right.
It literally plays the movie until you decide whether to go on or not. That would be great in podcasting. And what is it? 50% of these are video as well now. That would be very interesting. That would be absolutely fascinating. I think Spotify is trying to help with some of these things. My daughter is 24 now, as I told you. My twins are 24 now. She won't listen to a podcast, and I can't say if it's all of her generation, but unless it's on Spotify, she's like, "Dad, I won't listen to it. I've eliminated the app from the Apple Store, and as long as it's on Spotify, I will take the time to listen to it. But if it's not, I'm not going to."
Well, and a lot of people say that about YouTube as well.
Right. Well, we encourage our clients to make YouTube shorts. I'm not making any. I'd like to make some about the book, but I just haven't made the time. But I mean, YouTube shorts are pretty darn important right now. Those are being consumed massively. And I think with Sounds Profitable, they talk about, you know, the matter that YouTube, you can help me out here, Matthew, is one of the main ways people are finding podcasts now.
Yeah, I mean, YouTube, we always talked about this with clients about wanting to do a video. YouTube is the second largest search engine behind Google itself. People just go there to search for stuff. And so if you're not on there, you are probably invisible to a lot of your target audience.
To a huge segment. I don't see that as changing. So if they can figure out ways to do this sampling, this changing of the radio station, or what Netflix is doing with just letting the dang movie roll while you're hovering. And I remember being surprised at first, well, what's going on? And I think it's a great idea. So I'll give you credit for that. I think in the iTunes
Apple,
store,
if you're
they
listening.
Ought to do that. Yeah. Apple, if you're listening, please start giving us free samples.
You know who I am.
Because that's what we all want. You know?
Excellent. All right. And lastly, you know, I know you work on a lot of shows. You produce a lot of shows. Any podcast in particular you're listening to these days, just the personal joys, or, you know, something you recently discovered that, you think is worth sharing?
I listen to so many. I'll always talk about For Immediate Release. It took me a month of listening to it before I understood what they were talking about. I'm now on a weekly phone call with one of the hosts, and it's been a great joy to get to know him. But that's if you're really interested in B2B marketing, frankly. I love marketing, and such has been a passion of mine, although I didn't go to school for it. I just like marketing. When Dad and I were doing work 30 years ago and building brochures, and I liken that, you know, that experience to thinking about what podcasts are today, kind of a audio brochure. So I tend to listen in the mornings, Matthew. I don't know if you do, to The Daily. One of our former employees works on The Daily podcast. Nice. So I'm very proud of her. I actually just visiting town, and I actually saw her for the first time in 3 years last night. And I tend to like The Daily because it's short, and I enjoy getting a little, hopefully, nonpartisan catch up in news that I probably should be aware of. I've just looked at their app. I don't know if I'll use it. Maddie was talking to me about it and was very complimentary of it. So they've, as you know, they've created an audio app. I tend to use, as I just mentioned, Spotify a lot. Someone in the Maryland Podcast Association, Rob Jollis, does a show called Pocket Size Pep Talks. Now, you're not going to like all episodes from any one podcaster, right, Matthew? But he does something that I appreciate as someone who listens to a great many podcasts. He often does short format. So to answer your question, right now, because I'm consuming so much, I occasionally really like a podcaster who does something that's under 15 minutes long. I really appreciate it. And I think Sounds Profitable generally fits that length. So I would also answer Sounds Profitable, because that's a daily. It's often less than 15 minutes long, not always. And occasionally I'll be listening to it and say, wait a minute, and go back. There was one before Christmas and I had to listen to it three times because I was like, he really hit the nail on the head for me on that one. So I'm interested in industry news, but I'm also interested in storytelling. My friend Stephen Hart is a voice on What's Poppin' Penny, which is like the Electric Company or Sesame Street podcast for kids. And I think it's absolutely delightful. You just get transported into this sweet young girl's fantasy world. And, you know, I still like fantasy and science fiction and getting away from the daily grind. So I try to listen to a lot of formats. I'd recommend if anyone out there's listening, they have young kids, to check out What's Poppin' Penny. I like the daily, and for industry folks, I really do think Sounds Profitable is a must listen.
Stupendous listen. Yeah, I'll definitely check out that one for the kids, see if they're interested. We've tried a couple of podcasts with them, and it's give or take, you know, when you have twins, it's trying to find something they both like is really tough. Well, we both
understand that.
We have had the joy and pleasure of chatting with Charlie Burney. He is the co-founder and CLO, that's Chief Listening Officer at Podville Media. You can find them at podvillemedia.com, and the author of Tao of Podcasting. We'll have a link to that so you can pick it up and check it out. Charlie, it has been a pleasure as always. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Matthew. It's been a pleasure to see you again.
Thanks for joining us today on Podcasting Tech. There are links to all the hardware and software that help power our guest content and Podcasting Tech, available in the show notes and on our website at podcastingtech.com. You can also subscribe to the show on your favorite platform, connect with us on social media, and even leave a rating and review while you're there. Thanks, and we'll see you next time on Podcasting Tech.